FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It is July 5th, 2017. Hope you all had a spectacular July 4th. Lots of fireworks going off in Washington. That never stops. You know, Eisenhower once said that things are more like they are today than they've ever been before, which kind of is saying nothing. But that's what the state of our financial markets are like. We've got complacency all over the place. People thinking that they're starting to believe that 08, 09, the crash was an anomaly, and just keep doing the same thing over and over again, markets, whatever, and you're going to be okay. But person you're about to hear from, you heard from many times before, Jason Hartman, begs to differ. Jason, welcome back.
Kerry, happy Financial Independence Day to you and your listeners. I'm taking the 4th of July, the independence from England, and then recently England got its independence from the EU, and or is working on it. At least it's a process.
Work in progress.
I think that was very good for Great Britain. I think all of our listeners here were celebrating, hopefully, Financial Independence Day. So being out of the rat race. So yeah, we got a few good topics to dive into today.
There's nothing better than being out of the rat race, but you have to understand what the rat race is before you can figure out how to escape it.
And and you may be in it and not even know it.
Yeah, well, you probably are. You wake up in the morning and you take a shower and you get dressed and you throw on your clothes and you drive to work on a commute that you hate or really would rather not be doing, and you walk into an office and punch a time clock or have to tell somebody that, hey, I'm here, and then you receive a salary rather than the profits of your labor, guess what? You are part of the rat race, right?
Well, workers of the world unite. Oh, wait, I think that was a Karl Marx's movement, right?
But here we're
uniting in a different way. We're not expecting anything. We're not expecting any entitlements. We want to unite and just create our own freedom as individuals. So yeah, it's a very, very worthy goal, definitely. But you know, one of the things I want to talk to you about today, Kerry, is what we were chatting about off air, is this illusion of wealth. You know, do you by chance agree with that, by the way? I mean, is the United States and all its citizens, are they as seemingly wealthy as it might appear on the face of things? And what I'm going back to here is I'm talking about 1968, then I'm talking about 1971, then I'm talking about the roaring 80s where we had this massive expansion of credit, and how it's not really about the money supply per se anymore. It's more about the credit supply.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I go back to the 60s. All right. I was born in 1957. And back then, my mother didn't have to work and my father didn't really make a whole heck of a lot of money. He did okay, but he didn't do great. Now, the only women that stay home are the upper middle class women or the upper class women.
Yeah.
Everyone else has to work. And that's a result of decreased purchasing power of the currency unit, or what is commonly referred to as inflation. So we have not gotten richer as a nation. And even the most wealthy people of the day, the Bill Gateses, the Warren Buffets, the Elon Musks, and the Jeff Bezos, are not really nearly as wealthy as the Carnegies of their day, of the Rockefellers and the Morgans. They really are not when you adjust.
It's interesting though. And you know, when you debate that from a technological perspective, you know, that argument, it doesn't hold up because, you know, in that sense, I mean, our lives, I mean, you know, when we were back with my Venture Alliance Mastermind group, you weren't at that one. You came to the Jekyll Island event we had. But when we were back in Newport, Rhode Island, looking at those fabulous mansions, we all said to ourselves, you know, even the grandeur, the massive, amazing grandeur that we saw, our lives are so much better today, even if we're, you know, middle class, our lives are much better than the upper echelon of the entire human race back then, just because of the technology we have available to us. So it's a murky subject, right? It certainly isn't, it isn't as easy to say we're wealthier. I mean, do you agree with that? I don't know. Contradicting what you just said.
Look, rising tide lifts all boats. Yeah. And in some ways, yes. I mean, look, you don't have to work as long to buy stuff to feed your family. Obviously, but I'm going more from the 60s and the societal changes that have emerged as a result of inflation. And in that way, we are poorer, even though, every house has 5 flat screen TVs and, iPads and iMacs.
All this great stuff. Yeah, we get it. All the cool technologies. Yeah.
Sure. And the way that technology works, everything else. Because, look, you didn't have your options of, you love to travel. I think I'll go to Europe tomorrow. It was a lot bigger a deal, largely because the technology wasn't there. So it's given us a lot more choices and raised standards of living, no question about it. Definitely. It's lifted all boats. But imagine if we had honest money and we didn't have this creditism, where we would be.
Gary, absolutely. Like I always say, you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. If we had honest money, can you imagine how rich almost all of us would be today in comparison to the debased money, due to the Federal Reserve, the government, central banking, the unholy alliance there. But, when I was on your show last, I was probably rather controversial, and I'm sure I pissed a few people off, but I must remind you listeners, dear listeners, that if you don't piss a few people off, you're not doing your job. Okay.
For sure.
You've got to make people think. And I was talking a lot about feminism, right? Mm-hmm. And the deleterious, is that the right word?
Yeah, I don't know.
Bad effects of feminism. Yeah.
Sure.
I don't think it's a good thing. I think feminism is a scam. I think it's totally misleading. Okay. And think about it. It really has nothing to do with equality. Okay. And I don't want to get on this big tangent on this, but I'll just mention it because it ties in with the last interview and with inflation and what you just said, right? So if you are part of the corporatocracy, right, and you want to create more consumers for your products, and if you are in government and central banking and you want to stimulate the economy artificially, right? What do? You attack the family unit, you increase the divorce rate, you get women into the workforce, and feminism did all of those things beautifully, right? It was a massive success because instead of having one household with one coffee maker and, people sharing things and one stove and one washer and dryer, you can have two households and sell double the number of consumer products.
Yeah, that is pretty downright nefarious, Jason, that they would plan it out this way and just up the welfare distribution so that you increase the poor people's purchasing power at the expense of the rest of us, rest of you out there. And somehow we're going to have a better world as a result of it. But I'm not an advocate of feminism per se, and I don't want that to be the topic of this show. I don't see anything wrong with having women in the workforce having the choice.
Absolutely not. I mean, I love having women in the workforce. They're some of my best people are women, question about it. But here's the thing. Look, all of the feminists out there listening that may hate me talking about this right now, don't hate me for it, because the whole concept, the pitch of the feminist movement way back to Gloria Steinem was, women should have choices. They should not be slaves to men, right? That was kind of the pitch, whether
a man
it was said
is
or not,
not a
right?
Plan.
But think about it. They're now slaves to corporations. Mm-hmm. Okay. They're slaves to corporations, and they're dying of all the same stress-related diseases that were once only affecting men. Okay. Now all the women are dying of them, right?
Yeah.
And so what has it really accomplished in the broader scheme of things? There certainly is a lot of room for some criticism of the feminist movement. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So that's
Hey, a woman's place, not necessarily in the home. And I'm all for total equality. If we're dying of heart attacks, it's only right that women should die of them too, right? I mean, fair is fair. Yeah,
but, you know, it really is just not what it seems. Okay. Things are not, it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, enough of that. But yeah. Let's talk about this wealth effect, this fake wealth.
Right.
Okay. And if you look at the expansion of credit, it amazed me, and I'm sure it amazed you too. You know, those of us who at least think we're in the know, and I think I'm one of them, and I think you're one of them, and I think your audience is one of them, because you're consuming some of the alternative media that's not the mainstream BS, okay? Mm-hmm. Look at CNN blackmailing this guy with a Trump video last week. I mean, just disgusting. Yeah. And follow the hashtag on Twitter, CNN blackmail, right? It's unbelievable. But that's another tangent we're risking, okay?
Right.
But during the financial crisis, all of these talking heads were in the mainstream media. They were on CNBC relentlessly talking about how they were increasing the money supply and it wasn't working. It wasn't stimulating the economy, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were doing all this Keynesian BS, right? And what happened at the same time is that the credit supply contracted. So it's not about the money supply. I thought, how could these people be up there talking about this stuff with a straight face? They cannot be this dumb. I mean, I don't have a degree in economics. You know, I would consider myself a hack economist, or at least I'd call myself a practical economist, but I wouldn't call myself an economist in like the mainstream, right? That, you know, the academics would call themselves. And so, you know, just a great chart from Richard Duncan. I had him on my podcast again recently. And he's got this chart that shows back to 1952 up to into about 2013, right? Credit expansion went from Now, I'm just taking 1964 now, but that's the entire chart's length. Mm-hmm. In 1964, we had about $1 trillion available in available credit in the U.S. A trillion. Okay. And then by 2007, it was 50 trillion with a T, 50 trillion. That is an explosion of credit. Right now, it's about $59 trillion in credit. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this has created a smoke and mirrors game of fake prosperity. The wealth is largely fake because the U.S. has got this massive amount of credit available to consumers. I mean, why do you think when you go to Mexico or any third world country, okay, or to say it politically correct, developing country, okay, you know, sorry, I don't mean to offend any developing countries, okay, why do you think you see people selling, you know, burritos on the street corner out of a little cart? Well, it's because they don't have access to capital, right? Like we do. We're very lucky in the U.S. and the Western world in general that we have access to capital. Credit is available. So instead of selling burritos on a street corner in a little cart, you know, people can get capital and open a restaurant, right? That's a good use of capital. But consumer credit is the devastating use of capital, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is an illusion. It's not all an illusion. I'm just saying a lot of it is an illusion created by credit expansion. Thoughts?
Yeah, this is totally correct. And I'm going to take it a little bit further in that wittingly or unwittingly, you've latched onto that trend and you really have figured out a way to make legitimate profits from it. And just in case you don't really understand what Jason just said, it's like the wealth hasn't increased. What has increased is the money chasing the wealth. The wealth has gone up, shall we say, arithmetically, while the debt and credit has gone up geometrically. And that you have basically summed up the reason. When you've got self-liquidating debt on income property, this is why your system has worked flawlessly throughout the 60s, although you weren't alive then, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000s, and why it probably is going to continue to work into the indefinite future.
Right. So when you use credit in a positive way, for example, when you open a business like that burrito cart versus opening a restaurant example I gave, or you buy capital assets like income property, the most historically proven asset class in the world, with credit, that debt becomes self-liquidating. You know, debt is not good if you have to pay your own debt. But if you can outsource the responsibility to repay that debt to another party, namely a tenant, that's a pretty great deal. And then you have inflation come along, and we all talked about the devastating effects of inflation that hurt most people. It helps income property owners in not one, but two ways, Carrie. Yeah. As you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know because you've followed my work for a long time. But of course, the asset, the commodities, all the ingredients of that house or apartment complex are indexed to inflation overall. I mean, they may not be on a short-term basis, but on a long-term basis, they are. And so there's your hedge that most people talk about in simpleton terms. They say, oh, real estate's a hedge against inflation. Well, yes, that's true. That's the simple view, though. The more sophisticated view is, yes, you have that. But then the debt is debased by inflation. The same thing that debases everybody's savings, their stock portfolio, their mutual funds, their bonds. Bonds are terribly debased in inflation, so those are really bad. Also debases the debt that you or really in essence your tenant owes to the bank. So you get this, you get the power of leverage taking those indexed commodities and multiplying them by, say, 4 or 5 times, depending on what your leverage ratio is. That's wonderful. It's incredible. But then you get to pay the debt back in cheaper dollars. So you get a, it's like a double home run. You know, you get a home run twice, right? And bases are loaded, I guess, the baseball metaphor there. And it's just an incredible asset class from that perspective. You know, you can't do that with gold. I know you and a lot of your listeners are kind of gold buggish, you know, but, you know, gold is just, it's one dimensional. I mean, it's decent insurance. I agree with you there, but it doesn't have the multidimensional aspects of the real estate.
Absolutely. Insurance policy strictly, but it's so important that whenever you get somebody else to pay your debts willingly, whether they realize it or not, that's what a tenant does. He pays your debts, assuming there's debt on the property. Then, if you can get somebody else to pay your debts, look how well it works for the banks.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. So from the big picture, let's look at the macro picture. We talked a bit about the Federal Reserve and what a scam central banking is, and your listeners are very well aware of this. You know, you don't hear this stuff in the mainstream media, obviously, but in the alternative media, you hear about it.
You're making me laugh.
Think about what the Federal Reserve did when J.P. Morgan and, you know, all of the powers that be, all these aristocrats, what was it, Warburg, I think, you know, when they met in the Federal Reserve room just over 100 years ago, where we met, Carrie, where we had our meeting on Jekyll Island in Jekyll Island, Georgia, when they met there, they essentially put the entire world into debt, basically, okay, by creating Federal Reserve notes, okay? And that was an incredible deal for them. So what I'm saying is, look, at as evil as that might be, which it is, you know, great deal for them, a terrible deal for the population at large, you know, align your interest with them. You're not going to fix that, okay? Yeah. It's too powerful. So I just say, you know, throw your hands up, complain about it, tell everybody, spread the word on how terrible and evil it is. It is, that's all true, but align your own interest with them. So as they create more debt and they debase the currency even more, you're going to win. Time is on your side. Inflation is on your side.
Hey, it's good to be the king, right?
It's a pretty good deal.
Well, hey, that leads us to the next thing, because look, everybody, because they've driven down these rates artificially for so long, Jason, it's 10 years. And as a result, everybody's chasing yield. And it's kind of like the secret got out on income property, which has led to a total lack of volatility in all markets, financial markets, and real estate markets, with the exception of perhaps commercial real estate, because you got, you know,
the retail apocalypse. Yeah,
retail Armageddon, retail again. Yeah. And with the exception of office buildings, because, like, honestly, I can't see what they're going to do with them in another 20 years.
Nobody needs an office building anymore.
Okay. So, but outside of that, you know, when you talk residential, every aspect of residential real estate, Jason, there's so many buyers chasing so few sellers, and your area is no exception. And it's just an extension of basically yield whores going to look for the best yield. But if you're going to be a yield whore, by far real estate is the best way to go, because you got history behind it and you've got what we just talked about with creditism, credit being the real measure of wealth, at least for the time being in society. So, you know, now we're looking at three more interest rate hikes planned. And is that going to be enough to make a difference, Jason?
We shall see. But we got to tie into this discussion, Carrie, before we wrap it up. Janet Yellen's, I'm sure you think it's absurd, comment that we will never see another financial crisis in our lifetime.
Maybe she's planning a rapid, speedy departure for humanity.
Yeah, it's
maybe
like that's what's going she's on. Just basically saying, I'm stepping out of the Fed soon, so this will be somebody else's problem. That's exactly what Greenspan did to Bernanke. I mean, he just stepped out right before the crisis. It's unbelievable.
Hey, all the smart politicians, whomever they might be, they always get out at the top. They always leave smart business people. Look at Jack Welch. GE's earnings are booming. They got more cash than they know what to do with. Hey, this is really a good time to leave and go out as a hero. All leaders in their area, their biggest challenge is when to leave. And the really good ones figure it out. And
well, look at Seinfeld, end on a high. They just, they do. That's the way you do it. Right?
Isn't it true?
You gotta know when to leave.
When to hold.
Know when to hold them and know when to fold them,
right?
Exactly. As Kenny Rogers said.
It's so true. And you see this over and over again. Like politicians, just say, I'm done. I'm gone. And usually it's when the economy and everything is going like gangbusters and they can be perceived as having really led to it. And then others come in and they have to do the heavy lifting for all the excesses that their predecessors swept under the rug, which is exactly what happened with the poor Ben Bernanke. He wasn't a bad guy. He just was dealt an awful hand. And now Greenspan gets to write books and give speeches about we should be on the gold standard and things like that.
And that's amusing. So ridiculous, because the interesting thing about Alan Greenspan is he was a friend and fan, I guess, but at least a friend of Ayn Rand.
Protégé.
And, Ayn Rand's brilliant work, they used to hang out together. They used to have meetings at what they called the Collective, I think it was in her apartment in New York City or something. And they called it the Collective, kind of tongue in cheek, which they were not collectivist. But Greenspan, he became a total sellout when he really rose in the banking world, and then now he's talking about the gold standard. Give me a break. Wasn't he the one that said gold is a barbarous relic?
I think it was John Maynard Keynes, but he certainly didn't disagree with him.
Yeah, right.
And
he became a Keynesian sellout, Alan Greenspan did.
Hey, and all the progressives and liberals hate Ayn Rand with a passion, because anything that reeks of meritocracy, of being the prime beneficiary of your labor, is antithetical to the left, the modern day left.
The modern day left and modern day liberalism is a bankrupt ideology. And, you get in these debates with liberals and they just don't have any facts.
Why should they let that stop you?
They can never explain their point of view with any degree of logic. It's absurd. It's really absurd. It's just an absurdity.
Hey, instead, they hit people over the head with bicycle locks, right? They love to bash
the windows. They call them
racist. Yeah.
Everybody's a racist,
right?
Yeah.
They love to break the windows of Starbucks. Now, yes. Starbucks, there's no more progressive CEO or former CEO than Howie Schultz, who founded Starbucks. And yet, for
it's
some
easy,
reason...
It's easy to be a progressive liberal when you're mega wealthy.
Yet they love to bash in the windows of Starbucks whenever they have a riot. I don't understand that. It just shows that there's no ideology or any philosophy underlying their actions. And that's the amazing thing.
Yeah, it's absurd. Oh, it really is. God. But, that's another rabbit hole. We can go down another time, right?
Oh, good Lord. We've seen so much in so short a period of time of our lives here, Jason. And Hey, just like I said, everything seems normal today. It always seems normal. That's the normalcy bias, I think. Things are more like they are today than ever before. But
in the future, ain't what it used to be, according to Yogi Berra, the late Yogi Berra. Yeah.
And prediction is a tricky business, especially when you're talking about the future. So
I love it. Yeah. These are great.
Yeah, well, right now your present is you would love to sell more single family homes to investors, but they just ain't out there.
There's just, we are very challenged with a huge lack of inventory problem because everybody's just buying everything in sight. And this is the thing. Look, we do business all over the country in good, sensible, conservative, linear markets, not these crazy markets. You know, if you're hearing about the real estate market on the news, you probably shouldn't invest in it. Okay. So, you know, stay out of the cyclical crazy markets that are way past fundamentals. You know, the expensive of Northeastern markets, South Florida, where you live, Carrie, all the West Coast, I mean, California, LA, San Francisco, these markets are beyond absurdity. And people are buying properties in these markets and they are actually with a straight face calling themselves
investors.
Investors. Yeah. Yeah. We said it in stereo, didn't we?
Investors.
They think they're investors. They're just gamblers. They are total gamblers. In my 10 commandments of successful investing, commandment number 5 is thou shalt not gamble. In other words, the property must make sense the day you buy it from a yield perspective, or you don't buy it.
Because you're gonna
lose. I mean, you may not lose initially, but you'll lose eventually. Everybody gets caught in this gambling and speculation game. I've seen it happen over the decades. I've been doing this a long time now, and it's a fool's gamble. It really is.
Oh, for sure. You know, the next thing we're gonna see is a tulip-backed cryptocurrencies. Right?
Yes. Yes. You know, but if we back the next Bitcoin or Ethereum with blockchain, we can dress it up in new clothes.
And, isn't it great?
Yeah. It is. Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing what really intelligent people fall for over and over again throughout history. I mean, Bill Bonner in his great writings and all of his books, you know, whether it be Mobs, Manias, and I don't remember the title, all of them.
The Madness of Crowds, McKay.
Yeah, all of them.
Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. That is the quintessential book on speculations of manias, just like Bitcoin is a mania now. I don't care. Unless the world's ending tomorrow, Jason, Bitcoin's a mania. If it's ending and everything's collapsing.
Let me make a statement about the cryptocurrencies, okay? Mm-hmm. I would love nothing more than to be wrong about this. I would love nothing more than to see a cryptocurrency come and replace the fiat money system we have now. Yes. The system we have now is, it's awful. Okay. We all know that. All of your listeners are, you know, wise enough to know that. But the problem is there's this old saying, never bet against the Fed. Central bankers, not just the Fed, but all the central banks around the world and governments, they're in bed together. They are the most powerful forces the human race has ever known. And as soon as these cryptocurrencies get big enough, they will squash them because the cryptocurrencies or gold or silver, any precious metal, anything that represents competition for their fiat currencies that they use to control people is a threat to them. And they are the most powerful forces on earth. Remember, you are fighting and betting against the most powerful forces the human race has ever known. More powerful than any king or any queen or any government ever. Okay, they have standing armies. They have nuclear weapons. They have aircraft carriers. You're not going to win that bet. Okay.
No.
And I don't know when it will end. I mean, I got all these friends making fortunes in these cryptocurrencies, but
same here. Same here.
You know, it makes me very envious, trust me. But, you know, that's just not a solid bet.
Yeah. Well, you know, going back to Benjamin Graham, who is the dean of value investing, he really created it out of nothing. Securities analysis didn't really exist before Benjamin Graham
started. Fundamental analysis.
Right.
Yeah.
And basically, I'm looking for the definition. I can't find it, but the definition of an investment was something that you analyzed and you paid a multiple on discounted cash flow, although they didn't call it then. I don't think they had the discounted cash flow model. He might have developed it. So an investment is something based on you analyze it and it meets certain criteria. And he said everything else is speculation. And I think the way you do real estate is your properties are really investments. They have a cash flow. Their cost is based on their cash flow. You're not paying for speculation when that thing is going to sell, that they'll have struck oil or a huge factory or huge employer move down the street. You're going strictly on cash flow, historical cash flow, and projected
cash flow. And cash flow is very reliable. It's not perfect, but it's very reliable. You can't rely on appreciation. Everybody thinks they've got some new method to predict what's going to happen in the cycle. They're crazy. It's just, it's like, what was that company called? The big one, the first big one to crash in the late
Enron.
90s, long-term capital management, LCTM, right?
Yeah, of course.
They thought they had rigged the market. They had figured out the ultimate mathematical equation, and now it was done, right?
That worked out real well, didn't it?
Right.
That worked out great.
Yeah, how'd that work out for you?
Yeah. Well, anyway.
We're talking about all these sayings today, right? I'll go right back to the wisdom of the book written, almost 2,500 years ago, right? Ecclesiastes. Mm-hmm. There's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, and Virgil said there is nothing new under the sun, or actually Virgil said everything has been said, and he said that over 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
So it just keeps going and going. But anyways, at some point the trend will reverse. You got to be looking at income producing real estate. And when it comes to that, really, Jason is the only place to go to, in my opinion, having known you all these years, Jason, almost from the moment I started my show. And I've seen not just you, how you've done, but I've been to so many of your events, and there's no unhappy faces at these events. When is your next event coming up, by the way?
Well, I don't know when you're going to air this show. So today is July 5th. We've got an event this weekend in Oklahoma City. I believe a couple of your listeners are coming to that.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's our next event, Jason Hartman University Live, and a property tour of Oklahoma City properties along with that one on the weekend. People can go to jasonhartman.com, register for that, or look at our other events and our other things. But the most important thing is listen to my podcast, The Creating Wealth Show. Just published episode number 852.
Oh,
so we're at 852 episodes. We've been podcasting for like 13 years now, I think.
Wow.
So there's a lot of great info there. And Carrie's show and my show are the only ones you need to listen to.
Absolutely. We couldn't agree more. So if you have time to go out to Oklahoma City, you should check out Jason's site. Go there. It's going to be well worth your while. Highly recommended. No one ever went broke going to one of Jason's events, that's for sure. So just go over to jasonhartman.com, check out the shows, and Jason, we'll talk to you again real soon.
Happy investing to you and your listeners, Gary.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.